Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, known as the 12th Hour, in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is May 24, 2014, or it is if 26, 2018. We will start our fourth service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, Till the Storm Passes By. In the dark of the midnight have I oft hid my faith. All the storms howl above me, and there's no hiding place. Mid the crash of the thunder, precious Yah, hear my cry. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of the hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. Many times Satan whispered, there is no use to try, for there's no end of sorrow, there's no hope that by and by. But I know thou art with me, and tomorrow I'll rise, for the storm never darkened the sky. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. When the long night has ended and the storms come no more, let me stand in that present on that bright, peaceful shore. In that land where the tempest never comes, Yah may dwell with thee when the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of the hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. Okay, we're on part five of the 144,000. We're going to continue on with the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 1. We're on page 77. First, we're going to refer to a prayer thought taken from Psalms chapter 1. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the unrighteous, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Yahweh, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The unrighteous are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. Therefore the unrighteous shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Yahweh knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the unrighteous shall perish. Okay, if you're not righteous, then the best thing for you to do is get righteous. And if you don't know how to get righteous, well then, the best thing I suggest is that you get down on your knees and you ask the Heavenly Father to show you how to become righteous. I think that we could all follow that counsel, every one of us. And so we need to work on a daily basis, learning how to become righteous, because there's not going to be no sinners in this congregation that is being made up now. Okay, we're going to go with page 77, and we're on the subject of who is Israel by the promise, and we're dealing with the subtitle of Shepherds. And Pharaoh said unto his brethren, Joseph, what is your occupation? And they said unto Pharaoh, thy servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers. Genesis 47:3. Israel were shepherds, which is a symbol of the missionaries such as feed the lambs of the Elohim. In the early part of the church, the byword was every Seventh-day Adventist missionary and every missionary preacher. It ought to be so now, for the great struggle has not been between religion and no religion. It is between Yahweh's religion and man's religion. Review and Herald, January 23, 1930. I think it has always been that way. It's my comment. Right down to the very end, I think it will always be that way. So Yahweh brings forth the everlasting kingdom made up of the 144,000 with as his governing body. And he brings an everlasting righteousness according to Daniel 9:24-27. Until that day, you're going to always have Yahweh's religion and man's religion, one interfering with the other. Let's continue. Another Pharaoh arose. Okay. Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. Exodus 1:8. The first Pharaoh who exalted Joseph, (Yahshua), represented the leadership in the days of the apostles, then this new Pharaoh must represent the leadership of this present movement at the time this subject became known. Note this new Pharaoh knew not Joseph, (Yahshua). The meaning is that the leadership of this organization have left fallen their master, Yahshua. Okay, volume 5, page 217. Grievous and presumptuous sins have dwelt among us. And yet the general opinion is that the church is flourishing and that peace and spiritual prosperity are in all her borders. For the church has turned back from following Yahshua, her leader, and is steadily retreating toward Egypt. Yet few are alarmed or astonished at their want of the spiritual power. Doubt and even disbelief of the testimonies of the spirit of Elohim is leavening our churches everywhere. Satan would have it thus, for the testimonies are unread and unappreciated. Further explanation of the Pharaohs being types is given on the last page of this section. Now there rose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. And he said unto his people, behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for the Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramses, but the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew, and the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage, in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. Exodus 1:8-13. For the children of Israel, said Pharaoh, are too strong and mightier than we. Let us deal wisely and reduce their strength. So they, the Ishmaelites, or the Israelites, were drafted from the sheepfold to the brickyards and the field. But this did not reduce their strength, said the Pharaoh. Let us set taskmasters over them to wear them out. Note the application. Pharaoh is a king, the one who rules. The taskmasters in this case could be none other than a class of ministers referred to in the volume 5, page 217, Doubt and even disbelief of the testimony of the spirit of Elohim is leavening our churches everywhere. Satan would have it thus. Ministers who preach self instead of Yahshua would have it thus. The testimonies are unread and unappreciated. No longer is the byword of the Seventh-day Adventist every Seventh-day Adventist a missionary, every missionary preacher. It's what it used to be, but how much per capita have you made your budget instead of have you brought any souls unto Yahshua? Are your church members nearer unto him? It is not meant here that Christians ought not to give for the support of the cause. We ought to give and give more liberally than we have given in the past, but our gifts ought to come from a willing heart and not from the result of the lashes. For the people should be fed with the spiritual food so that they would feel the need of giving without overbearing on the subject. When Moses was about to build the sanctuary in the wilderness, Elohim commanded him, saying, "Speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring me an offering of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart. You shall take my offering." Moses was commanded to take offerings only from those who willingly gave from their heart. We are told by the spirit of prophecy that ministers should not put all their efforts and time with the church. Members are not to expect a sermon every Sabbath. Ministers should rather engage themselves in the working for the outsiders. Read volume 9, page 140. Have we taken heed to this instruction? For example, we have scores of the ministers in Los Angeles and immediate vicinity, but how many public efforts have we? It was announced just a short time ago that there were only two. Thus it has been for some years. What are these ministers doing day after day and week after week? It seems they are doing nothing but preparing a sermon during 6 days of the week to preach on the Sabbath, and then it is either something to sell or some particular budget to raise. How many sermons preached do we read of in the Bible urging people to give money or to buy something to support the cause? Not one. We have polluted the house of the Elohim with the merchandise even on the Sabbath morning, which hour is dedicated as a day of rest to worship Elohim. Volume 1, page 471 and 472. A great mistake has been made by some who profess present truth by the introducing of the merchandise in the course of a series of the meetings, and by their traffic diverting minds from the object of the meetings. If Yahshua were now upon the earth, he would drive out these peddlers and traffickers, whether they be ministers or people, with a scourge of small cords, as when he entered the temple anciently. Masters have stood in the dust, ministers have stood in the dust, and preached a most solemn discourse. And then by the introducing of the merchandise and acting as a part of the salesman, even in the house of the Elohim, they have diverted the minds of their hearers from the impressions received and destroyed the fruit of their labor. Their time and strength should be held in reserve, that their efforts may be thorough in a series of meetings. For their time and strength should not be drawn upon the sell-out books when they can be properly brought before the public by those who have not the burden of the preaching of the word. And he's got parentheses, call porters. For it is written, "My house shall be called the house of prayer, but ye have made a den of thieves." For these traffickers might have pleaded as an excuse that the articles they held for sale were for sacrificial offerings, but their object was to get gain, to obtain means, to accumulate. Volume 1, page 472. Our conference is not ignorant of the instruction here given, and the evil which is practiced in the churches. At the Autumn Council held in Milwaukee, Wisconsin in 1923, the question of book sales on the Sabbath day was brought forth in connection with other matters, and the following resolution was passed and published: that all campaigns for the promotion of the periodicals or book sales on the Sabbath day be eliminated, and that those responsible for the promotion of these campaigns be directed to the method of the House, to House solicitation by the visiting committee in connection with the campaigns for the literature sale. That we invite our publishing houses to exercise caution, circularizing our people on behalf of the publishing house projects, and to refrain from sending to the church officers matters to be presented on the Sabbath with the previous arrangements with the local union and general conference. Milwaukee Autumn Council, October 9th through the 17th, 1923, Review and Herald. Okay, November the 22nd, 1923. It says, read volume 9, page 260. For we read in the Testimonies Ministers, page 477, a strange thing has come into our churches. Men who are placed in the position of responsibility, that they may be wise helpers unto their fellow workers, have come to suppose that they were set as kings and rulers in the churches, to say to one another, do this, to another, do that, and to another, be sure to labor in such and such a way. This Pharaoh has drafted the people from the sheepfold to the brickyards or the field. For the taskmasters, being commanded to oversee the work, urge the brick budgets and wear out the people. For the existing sins in the church are passed over and no one cares. Those who do reprove wrongs incur their displeasure. In volume 3, page 266, speaking of the condition of the church at the time of the sealing, marking of the 144,000 and the slaughter of the church, we read, those who have excused these wrongs have been thought by the people to be very amiable and lovable and lovely in the disposition, simply because they shunned to discharge a plain scriptural duty. The task was not agreeable to their feelings, therefore they avoided it. Furnish straw no more, and Pharaoh commanded the same day the taskmasters of the people, and the officers, saying, you shall no more give the people straw to make brick as heretofore. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. And the taskmasters of the people went out, and their officers, and they spake to the people, saying, thus saith Pharaoh, I will not give you straw. Go ye, get you straw where you can find it. Yet not all of your work shall be diminished. Exodus chapter 5, verse 6, 7, 10, and 11. Pharaoh will not furnish straw. That is, he will not render any help, but the people must produce the same amount of bricks. In the beginning of this organization, a Seventh-day Adventist, the denominational institution, sanitariums, and hospitals were built for the purpose of caring for our own people, members of the church. After the cause of the patient had been diagnosed, the cause being made known with the instruction, some aid or treatments were to be given. This help was to be rendered whether they were able to pay much, little, or nothing. Such is the work of the Good Samaritan. In the former numbers of the Testimony for the Church, I have spoken of the importance of the Seventh-day Adventist establish an institution for the benefit of the sick, especially for the suffering and sick among us. I have spoken of the ability of our own people and the point of the means to do this, and have urged that in view of the importance of this branch of the great work of the preparation to meet the Yahweh, or the Yahshua, when I saw those who managed and directed running into the dangers shown me, of which I had warned them in public and also in private conversation and letters, a terrible burden came upon me. That which had been shown me as a place where the suffering and sick among us could be helped was one where sacrifice, hospitality, faith, and pity should be the ruling principle. But when the unqualified calls were made for large sums of money, with the statement that stock taken would pay large percent, when the brethren who occupied positions in the institution seemed more than willing to take large wages than those were satisfied with who filled other and equally important stations in the great cause of the truth and reform. When I learned with pain that in order to make the institutions popular with those not of our faith and secure their patronage, a spirit of compromise is rapidly gaining ground at the Institute, manifested in the use of Mr., Miss, and Mrs. instead of brother and sister, and in popular amusement in which all could engage in a sort of comparatively innocent frolic. When I saw these things, I said, this is not that which was shown me as an institution for the sick, which would share the signal blessing of the Elohim. This is another thing. And yet calculations for more extensive buildings were made, and a call for large sums of money were urged, and it was then managed. I could but regard the Institute on the whole as a curse. Several who came to Battle Creek, humble, devoted, confiding Christians, went away almost infidel, but the general influence of these things was creating prejudice against the health reform, and very many of the most humble, the most devoted, and the best of our brethren, and was destroying faith in my testimonies and in the present truth. The brethren who have stood at the head of this work have appealed to our people for the means on the ground that the health reform is a part of the great work connected with the third angel's message. In this, they have been right. It is a branch of the great charitable, liberal, sacrificing, benevolent work of the Elohim. Then why should these brethren stock in the Health Institute will pay a large percent? It is a good investment, a paying thing. Why not as well talk of stock in the Publishing Association paying a large percent? If these are two branches of the same great closing work of the preparation for the coming of the Son of Man, why not? Or why not make them both matters of liberality? For the pen and the voice that appeal to the friends of the cause on behalf of the publishing fund held out no such inducement. Volume 1, pages 633-636. How do our institutions now measure with this straight testimony? Can we say they are a charitable, liberal, sacrificing, benevolent institution? Listen to the enormous profits they make. Presentment is here made of the annual report of the St. Helena Sanitarium as it appeared in the Pacific Union Recorder of April 25, 1929. The notes payable at the end of 1925 were $60,044. The cents are not here given. $60,044, okay. In 1926, they had been reduced to $49,031. 1927 to $36,321. And at the close of 1928, they were down to $26,415. In 3 years, they were reduced from $60,000 to $33,629, resources fixed and current. At the close of 1928, $371,105, the liabilities $45,809. There is a decrease in the liabilities of nearly $5,000. Cash on hand at the close of 1928 was $10,749. Present worth $325,296. The gross income $456,258. The net income $437,284. For the average daily attendance of the patients was 85 plus, and the income from patients direct was $261,363. The net gain was $10,439.39. How could it be possible for an institution to do any charitable work at all and yet earn $111,988 above its present worth in the one single year. Note, present worth, $325,296. Net income, $437,284 in 1928, but this is not the worth. Our brethren have gone so blind that they think these enormous profits give them a wonderful credit for their wise management, and boast over it and say that the sanitarium is facing sunshine. Truly our Elohim knew what he was saying when he said the latest sin are blind, wretched, and miserable, and poor, and naked, though they think they are rich and increased with the goods and have need of the nothing. See the contrast of the boasting between the latest sins and the other institutions of whom some often think the devil is their leader. Following in the annual report of a mission in Los Angeles for the corresponding year 1928, these items been given free of charge to the needy. The annual report for the year ending December 31st, 1928 shows 527,481 meals served, 137,287 lodgings furnished, laundry service 53,334 pieces, barber service 20,394, baths 12,339, garments distributed 32,541, 1,791 shoes repaired, employment secured for 9,204 individuals, medical aid given to 3,117, while the chapel report shows that during the year 15,340 persons professed salvation in the daily meetings, which are continuous from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. and are conducted by groups from the churches of all denominations. Copied from a Los Angeles newspaper. Is the devil become more charitable than a Yahshua? Why have we gone to sleep? Is it dollars and cents that the Yahweh wants? Are these things not destroying the confidence of the public in the people of Elohim? Are these things adding or distracting from the fruit of our labor? Are we representing Elohim and carrying the third angel's message to unto a dying world? Is the Yahshua our pattern and example? Why have we allowed the devil to deceive us? Is not this a call to arouse the people of Elohim to a Messiah-like service? Okay, how long shall we stay asleep? It is bad enough for Elohim's people to turn turn down one who is not in the faith from receiving the benefits of Elohim at the hand of his people, but it is a thousand times worse to turn down one of Israel. He who would sacrifice and cast his lot with the people of Elohim, faithful in the tithe paying and offerings as the Yahweh has prospered. If Elohim should permit poverty to overtake such a one with sickness or old age, what do we do with them? Do we send them away and tell them, Elohim bless you? In the county hospital for Elohim's people and Elohim's hospitals for money making, or I say, is the county hospital for Elohim's people and Elohim's hospitals for money making, is the county farm for Yahweh's people, there with the unrighteous and with the unclean on their table, as we believe from a religious standpoint, amidst profanity, swine, and tobacco? Is this the kind of place for the child of Elohim and the temple of the Holy Spirit, according to our faith? What kind of answer will we give him when he comes? Will we hear the words, well done, good and faithful servant, as we read in Matthew 25:35-36? For I was an hunger, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Shall this saying be ours, or will we find ourselves at the left hand with the terrible curse, as in the Matthew 25:41-43-46? Depart from me, you cursed into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was an hungry, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. naked and you clothed me not, sick and in the prison and you visited me not. And these shall go away in everlasting punishment, but the righteous in the life eternal. According to Volume 1, page 639, as early as 1850, this brother became a Sabbath keeper, and from that date he contributed liberally to the several enterprises that had been undertaken to advance the cause, till he became reduced in property. Yet when the urgent, unqualified call came for the Institute, he took stock to the amount of $100 at the meeting, and he introduced the case of his wife, who is very feeble and who can be helped, but must be helped soon, if ever. He also stated his circumstances and said that if he could command the $100 then in the Institute, he could send his wife there to be treated. But as it was, he could not. He replied that he should never have invested a dollar in the Institute, that there was a wrong in the matter which he could not help, and there the matter dropped. I do not hesitate to say that this sister should be treated, a few weeks at least, at the Institute free of charge. Her husband is able to do but little more than to pay her fare to and from Battle Creek. Do we have such cases as these at the present time? Do we deal with these people like some farmer deals with his horse? He takes good care of the horse while it is young and doing his work, but when the animal gets old and feeble, he then drives it out in the open field in the winter weather, just at the time the poor horse needs the best of care. Are we not like this hard-hearted farmer who starves his horse in the winter weather with the frost on the back of the worn-out animal to save a few bundles of straw? Cruel, is it not? It is left to the reader to answer the question. Midwife. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew, and they were grieved because of the children of Israel. And the king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwife, and he said, when you do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women, if it be a son, then you shall kill him, but if it be a daughter, then she shall live. Exodus 1:12-16. For the midwives symbolize the church school teachers who nurse the children in the system of the education. You may ask, is it possible that the devil would attempt to deceive the teachers and poison the children's mind? The devil is not leaving one string loose. References here made to the home and school. Journal of the Christian Education of December 1929, published by the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist, Washington, D.C. And every teacher in the denomination is supposed to be a subscriber of this magazine. The above-mentioned issue is full of the Christmas stories, Christmas keeping and Christmas program, and gifts which the teachers are supposed to pass on to the children. As it would be too lengthy to quote it all, only the very last sentence and the closing words under the paragraphs, what Christmas may always mean, is quoted here, and in general, a baptism of the reality, simplicity, and sincerity in the observance of the world's supreme birthday. Think of these words, dear reader, a Seventh-day Adventist paper published by the General Conference to exalt the world's supreme idolatrous day to a birthday of the Yahshua and hand it to the teachers of the denomination. Now here Vichy Hardoff is making a real big issue of this here birthday celebration done on Christmas Day for the Yahshua. And, you know, I didn't realize this. I didn't realize that birthdays were a form of idol worship. It never, ever has occurred to me or been brought to my attention ever in my life until we was down at Kermit. And then we came across it by accident. We didn't, our divine providence, we didn't have a clue until we got this book, Fossilized Customs, there. one day, and we read about it. We were really shocked, and kind of found out that one celebrating his own birthday is no different than celebrating someone else's birthday, and especially Yahshua's invented birthday. You know. Okay, now, and so that's what we learned down there, that Gilead Center, we were all just as much in the worshiping idols there as a shepherd rod before us, and as a Seventh-day Adventist before the shepherd rod. I mean, and then clear on back to the cross, and clear on back to the beginning of time. They've always had idol worship. Okay, in the church, in the true church of Israel, unless they had a purified section of the kingdom set up at different times, and you have that recorded there in the scriptures, where different kings took over, and some were good kings, some were bad kings. The first thing that the good king would do is he would abolish idolatry, tear down their altars, their Baal altars, and so forth. And then the evil king, he would make sure that he continued on with Baal worship. Okay, same thing today. Let us go ahead. But the midwives feared Elohim and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men, children alive. Exodus 1:17. Here we have one good symbol. And let us say, Amen for the teachers. They feared Elohim. We urge you to send your children to the school of the denomination, where it is the best place for them. For the name of the one was Shipra, and the name of the other was Pua. Exodus 1:15. For the meaning of these names are beauty and splendor. Indeed it is. It would have been impossible for two midwives to wait on the great multitude of women, but the fact is that there were only two. The reason for this is to make the perfect symbol, meaning both classes of the teachers, male and female, beauty and splendor. Male children in the now. Therefore, Elohim dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mightily. Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. Exodus 1:20-22. For the chief object of the Pharaoh scheme was not to reduce the people in number. Had this been his aim, he should have killed the female, for in those days they practiced polygamy. Had he given an order to cast the female children in the river and save the males, he could have accomplished his purpose and also added to his slave, for it was the men who professed or who produced the bricks. We read in the Pharaoh's rereading the Patriarchs and Prophets, page 242. Satan was a mover in this matter. He knew that a deliverer was to be raised up among the Israelites, and by the leading of the king to destroy their children, he hoped to defeat the divine purpose. This was the object of the whole affair, and this is a symbol. The application will now be made. Testimonies Ministries 475. Under the chapter entitled Let Heaven Guide, we shall read, prophecy must be fulfilled. Yahweh says, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. Somebody is to come in the spirit and power of the Elijah, and when he appears, men may say, you are too earnest, you do not interpret the scriptures in the proper way. Let me tell you how to teach your message. No plainer statement could have been made than this, that we must look for a prophet or a message in the near future. If this is an inspired statement, then it seems it would be the duty of the watchman on the walls of the Zion to educate and instruct the people that there is a prophet or a message to look for. But what have we? On the contrary, the general opinion of the entire denomination is no prophet cometh, neither is there any message to be expected. We have all the truth and we need none, is a cry from the camp of Israel. Thus we see how the old enemy has duplicated his underhand deception with the church at the present time. Just as the Pharaoh was unconscious of the main purpose of his command, just so by the unconsciousness of the leaders, the shrewd deceiver has attempted to drown the prophet or the message of reform for the present time. Thus it proves in every instance that the experience of Israel in Egypt is a photograph of Israel, the true. If a prophet or even a message should come, the church is not ready to accept either. The result may be the same as it was with the Jewish nation and the coming of the Yahshua. How terrible the thought. We had the same spirit at Gilead Center at our close down there in 2002 as they did at the head of the cross with the Pharisees. We had the same spirit there. While it seemed to be the Egyptians in the interest of the empire to hold these people in the body, the real purpose behind it all was the determination of the Satan, the dragon's power, Isaiah 51:9, to hold the people of the Israel in the bondage of the sin and to prevent the work of the reform to which Elohim has set his hand as the time of the prophecy came. Review and Herald, January 23, 1930. That was written. Somebody recopied it. Male children of the denomination, how drowned? Has the devil drowned any of the male children in the river Nile at this time? Where are the men in this denomination? They must be in the river Nile, for it is a symbol of the sins in the world. And that is where we generally find the men and the women in the church. The question may be asked, what sifted out the men? The spirit of prophecy teaches that we should see to it that employment is furnished to newcomers in the truth, to make it possible for them to keep the Sabbath, also to take care of the poor and sick among us. For this instruction has been altogether disregarded, with the result that the men are shifted out of the church. Men love the truth as much as women do, but as soon as they hear the truth, they begin to inquire about things. Immediately the difficulties arise, and the question is asked, how can I keep the Sabbath and yet hold my position? If I should let my position go, can I secure another? Would the church help me find something to do? Would the church render some assistance in case of the great need, such as lack of food, clothing, or in case of sickness? All these questions are answered at once with no. The result is the decision is made and the truth is turned down. If the church had furnished some encouragement along these lines, this position would not have been taken by these newly interested parties, and the result would have been that the men as well as the women would have been in the church. Men being the wage earners, the increase of the tithes and offerings cannot be estimated, and the little expenditure in helps would be but a fragment in the comparison. Employment agencies would be a great help to the denomination. Not only employment would have been secured from the people outside the organization, but the work among Adventists would be secured by the Adventists. Thus the men are cast into the world now, but the women left alive in the church. Moses found by the princes, quoting Exodus 2, 2 and 3. And the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with the slime and with pitch, and put the child therein. She laid it in the flags by the river's bank. Providence led the Egyptian princess to the river to wash herself, and after seeing the ark, she sent her maid to fetch it. She saw that the babe wept, and she had compassion on him. For the sister of the babe stepped to the Pharaoh's daughter and said, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" On the arrival of the child's mother, Pharaoh's daughter said, "Take this child away and nurse it for me." And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter at the age of 12. And the princess named him Moses. The lesson here is, with all the satanic scheme, it would be impossible to defeat the divine purpose. Moses' choice. As a Moses, the top received the highest education the courts of the Pharaoh could produce, after becoming of the age, he was compelled to choose one of the two things, either the throne of Egypt or to suffer affliction with the children of Israel. Just so modern Moses, the antitype, receives the highest education the denomination can produce, when of the age, finished education professor. Modern Moses is well being compelled to choose one of the two things, either professor in the world, Egypt, with a large income, fame, and the pleasure to sin for a season, or to work for the denomination with a small salary and suffer affliction with the church, the children of Israel. As the Moses, the type, chose the latter, just so Moses, the antitype, prefers to stay with the denomination, esteeming the reproach of the Yahshua greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. For the statistics of the movement, so we are told, show that 90% of the children who go to school of the denomination remain true to the message. This proves the lesson taught here is correct. Moses, a misconception. And it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out unto his brethren and he spied an Egyptian smiting an Hebrew. He slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews stole together. And he said unto him that did the wrong, wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian? And Moses feared. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of the Midian. Exodus 2:11-15. It says, Moses supposed he was to deliver the children of Israel by force or arms. Therefore he rolled up his sleeves and went about his duty. Moses' misconception of the method to be used in the deliverance of the Israel was not the only thing wrong with the man. If that was the way he understood Israel was to obtain their freedom, he failed to carry out the plan. His trouble was not because of lack of education or training as a general of the army that he failed to carry out his project, but because he was too cowardly and feared Pharaoh. If this was not the cause of his failure, why then kill only one Egyptian? Bury him in the sand, and after it was made known, run away and leave Israel to perish in slavery. If his intentions or understanding was to lead Israel against the armies of Egypt, he should not have hidden the Egyptian in the sand, but left him upon the ground for an example, and then go after others. Failing to carry out his proposed scheme, Moses made a double mistake. For the ancient Moses is a symbol of the modern Moses' present leadership. As the Moses failure was not because of the lack of the training, but because of a misconceived idea of the method to be carried out, just so with the leadership now. As the Moses failed to accomplish his own mistaken plan, what he supposed was wise judgment, just so the leadership have now failed on their part. The aim has been to finish the work in this generation, which is practically past, and at the rate of speed the work is now going now, it could not be finished in another 100 years. We are in danger of trusting to methods, organization, and high-pressure service, which if taken alone can, in the end, result only in the confusion, dissatisfaction, and defeat. Review and Herald, February 20th, 1930. For the application of the tithe. If the Pharaoh is the king, the leadership who rules over the people, then the church is the queen, then the princess is the church school. Egypt is a symbol of the world and the Nile a symbol of the sins of the world. By the aid of the good fearing mother, of the Elohim fearing mother, Moses, the type, was not cast into the river now. Just so with the modern Moses, who by the help of his Christian mother is safe in the river, now the sin in the world, but when she cannot keep him any longer and must send him to the schools of the land where sin reigns, the church school, the princess finds him. As the Moses, the type, received his education by the aid of the princess, Just so modern Moses receives his education by the aid of the church school. We, like Moses, have thought that we are to deliver Israel by the force of the arm. For the aid of the men, like Moses, we are too cowardly to accomplish anything. It has been said by a good minister of Elohim, this is wrong in the church, and that is not right, and should be corrected, but we cannot do it. Why? Because he's afraid that he will lose his job. But what shall we do? Work for the Elohim and trust in him, or work for the Pharaoh and trust in the job? According to volume 5, pages 80-82, but the days of the purification of the church are hastening on apace. Elohim will have a people pure and true, and a mighty sifting soon to take place. We shall be better able to measure the strength of Israel. The signs reveal that the time is near when the Yahweh will manifest that his fan is in his hand, and he will thoroughly purge his floor. Those who have trusted unto intellect, genius, or talent will not then stand at the head of the rank and file. They did not keep pace with the light. Those who have proved themselves unfaithful will not then be entrusted with the flock. In the last solemn work, few great men will be engaged. They are self-sufficient, independent of the Elohim, and he cannot use them. The Yahweh has faithful servants who, in the shaking, testing time, will be disclosed to view. There are precious ones now hidden who have not bowed the knee to Baal. They have not had the light which has been shining in a concentrated blaze upon you. But it may be under a rough and uninviting exterior that the pure brightness of a genuine Christian character will be revealed. In this time, the gold will be separated from the dross in the church. Many a star that we have admired for its brilliancy will then go out in the darkness. The most weak and hesitating in the church will be as a David, willing to do and dare. Then will the church of the Yahshua appear, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners. Elohim will work a work in our day that but few anticipate. He will raise up and exalt among us those who are taught rather by the unction of His Spirit than by the outward training of the scientific institution. These facilities are not to be despised or condemned. They are ordained of the Elohim, but they can furnish only the exterior qualification. So the Elohim will make manifest that he is not dependent on learned, self-important mortals. Now we come to the subtitle of Moses in the Wilderness. But Moses fled in the face of the Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of the Midian. And the priest of Midian gave Moses Zipporah, his daughter, to wife. Now Moses kept the flock of the Jericho, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of the Elohim, Horeb. Behold, the bush burned with the fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, while the bush is not burnt. Elohim called on him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. And Yahweh said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people, which are in Egypt, and I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians. Now you see, Yahshua is actually Yahshua the one that came down and talking to Moses in the burning bush, because he went with Moses down to the Egypt, and he was that rock in the cloud that led the children of Israel out of Egypt. He said, now let's continue. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said unto Elohim, Who am I, that I should go unto Pharaoh? And Moses said unto Yahshua, O my Yahshua, I am not eloquent, neither hitherto for, nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. I am of the uncircumcised lips. Okay. And how shall Pharaoh hearken unto me? And the Yahweh said unto him, Yahshua said unto him, Who hath made man's mouth, or who maketh it be dumb, or deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Yahweh? Now therefore go, and I will be thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. And Yahweh said unto him, What is this in thine hand? And he said, A rod. And he said, Cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from before it, and Yahweh said unto Moses, Put forth thine hand, and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand, and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. And he said, O my people, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. And the anger of the Yahweh was kindled against Moses. Read Exodus 2:15 to 4:13. Application of the lesson. The last Moses is the unlearned Moses. Note, he is slow of speech, has no eloquence, is of a slow tongue, and uncircumcised lips, untrained. He knows not how to approach Pharaoh. He shrinks at the thought of standing before the great monarch, like the mercury shrinks from this north wind. As though this Moses is handicapped, he has nerve, he is not a coward. He risks his life, and he was asked only once to take the fabulous serpent by the tail, and he did so. This Moses is not a crown prince, but a common shepherd only. Okay, for the shepherd, Moses is a type of the men who are to bring about reformation and be used in the time of the loud cry. This would be the antiquity Elijah then. I was fixing to say that a while ago. This last character that plays the master prophet in this 12th hour would be the Elijah, the David. And whatever the prophecy calls for, that's the role he fulfills at the time. And be used in the time of the loud cry brought to view in the following quotation. Quoting Alive Sketches, page 245, Elohim is putting burdens upon more inexperienced shoulders. He is fitting them to be caretaking, to venture to run risk also. Volume 5, page 82, He will raise up and exalt among us those who are taught rather by the unction of His Spirit than by the outward training of the scientific institutions. Well, we're getting close to the end of our study this hour. We're just going to bring this to a close and resume it in our next study. Let's close now with a song. We're marching to Zion.
Come with that love of Yah, and let her just be known. Join in a song with a sweet accord. Join in a song with a sweet accord. And thus surround the throne, and thus surround the throne. We're marching to Zion. Beautiful, beautiful Zion, we're marching upward to Zion, the beautiful city of Yah. If those refuse to sing who never knew our Yah, the children of the heavenly King, the children of the heavenly King, may speak their joys abroad, may speak their joys abroad. We're marching to Zion, beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching upward to Zion, the beautiful city of Yah. The hill of Zion yields a thousand sacred sweet before we reach the heavenly field. Before we reach the heavenly field, or walk the golden streets, or walk the golden street. We're marching to Zion. Beautiful, beautiful Zion, we're marching upward to Zion, the beautiful city of Yah. And let our song abound and every tear be dry. We're marching through Emmanuel's crown. We're marching through Emmanuel's crown.
to fare, worlds on high, to fare, worlds on high. With marching design, beautiful, beautiful sound. We're marching up to Zion, the beautiful city of Yah.